I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Yes, it's come to this. You're listening to the World Cricket Show, the world's favourite cricket show, back on the air this week, in spite of frankly disheartening popular demand. My name is Adam Bayfield, and I'll be your host tonight. And joining me in the studio is, I think it's safe to say, without question, the world's most respected cricket pundit. It's Tony Kerr.
It's very kind of you to say.
How's it going, Tony?
Little blow, but yeah, it's good, thanks.
It's been a while. Or has it?
It has, I think. Oh, no, it hasn't. You're right.
Well, it has.
Oh, yeah, I'm just cottoning on now.
What I just said was a little bit too smart for you.
But yeah.
It's been a while for the listeners. It's not been a while for us, because this is the second time that we're recording this episode.
We had so much fun doing the first one. We just deleted it. Let's do it again. Let's see if we can, yeah, let's have another crack.
My computer crashed 40 minutes into a recording. You know, I think the listeners are just going to have to take my word for it when I say it included, without doubt, some of the funniest jokes that I've ever made, some of the most astute points about cricket that I've ever made. Tony said some things as well. But unfortunately, it's all gone. So we're just going to have to do it all exactly the same. You know, Tony, like, if it sounds like Tony is only kind of fake laughing at my jokes, that's why. He's heard them before.
Yeah, I mean, it will be difficult to replicate that, because we got into such a zone that I don't think either of us are really kind of conscious of what was going on. We were just it was just the punditry was just flowing.
It was magic in a bottle, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm exhausted. Whether I can get into, you know, whether I can channel that again.
But I was saying, you know, we've loosened up a bit now. We've got a few overs under our belt.
Yeah,
maybe now we can. Maybe we'll just. It'll take us onto a new level of podcasting brilliance.
Well, let's find out.
How are you, Tony?
It's good stuff already. Yeah, it's really good, thanks, yeah. We've got a few to ask for the third time tonight.
It is our first episode for a few weeks. Listeners may find this hard to believe, but you've been away. You've been on what I might venture to describe as a holiday.
That's a strong word. But yeah, it was a holiday. Yeah.
Where did you go and did you have a good time? Those are my first two questions for you tonight.
Italy, yes.
Okay, well, that's good. It's succinct.
Crack on.
To the point.
No, it's nice, thanks. Yeah, very good. Yeah, good.
A lot of eating and drinking.
Yeah, exactly. Just food, drink, sea.
You actually told me you've eaten some vegetables.
Yeah, I mean, I went out of my comfort zone and I had vegetables and I did something I haven't done for a very long time, which you were excited to hear about.
I was very excited. I've heard rumours that you read a book. And I say rumours, you told me that you read a book. You phoned me up. Adam, guess what? I read a book and I was like, wow, what a nerd.
Leave me to it. true story. Started and finished a book on the same holiday. That's an unnecessary qualification, because I don't think I've ever finished a book I've started on holiday, or really that I've started before or after holiday.
Just ever.
Yeah. So quite an achievement for me.
Well, yeah, for new listeners, you are famously anti-book.
Well, it's because you're so into books, so I'm like, I feel like I have to position myself against you.
Just for the benefit of the podcast,
yeah,
the
exactly.
Dynamic. Yeah. It's, we're the original odd couple.
Yeah. Even if it stifled my own progression
in life.
Yeah, I've still belligerently just held on to this, like, oh, no, Adam likes books. Lame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think listeners will agree, it's really benefited the show. Well, actually, a few years ago, you did make a New Year's resolution that you were going to read a book a week. Very quickly, you changed that to read a book. And you still didn't manage to pull that off.
Well, correct.
Well,
no,
until...
correction. That's the right word I was looking for. No, exactly. Correction. I have read a book.
Well,
so...
not in that year. That was like 2014.
Stick it, mate. Stick it.
3 years later, you've managed to pull it off.
It's a rush.
You've actually written more books than you've read in the last few years.
And how many people can say that?
as a co-author on the Guernsey Beach Guide, you've written more books than you've read, including that book that you wrote.
Yeah, no, it was good times. Actually, it's my biggest achievement for a while, and I was very, 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 very excited to tell you. So let's not belittle it.
You were, yeah. Your girlfriend told me that you were stopping every sort of couple of pages to go, God, Bayfield's going to be so proud of me.
This is true.
Bayfield's going to love this.
I did briefly toy with the idea of Facebook Living the last sort of two or three chapters. It's quite fun reading, isn't it? That's right. And it's quite fun telling people about the book you're reading.
You said it went straight into the top five books you've ever read. What was this book? Listeners are probably dying to know.
What was it? Yeah, it's a football book. Yeah, The Miracle of Castel De Sangro. I don't know if it's an Italian town, but we have a parish. This is really, really boring for everyone, but we have a parish in Guernsey spelt Castel, which we pronounce Catel.
Mm.
But I don't know, in Italy, would they pronounce it, so it's spelt the same, would they pronounce it, presumably not Catel?
I don't know why you said this wouldn't be interesting Castel. To anyone. So, you know.
It's just about the differing pronunciations of the word Castel in Italy and Guernsey. It's fascinating. No, it's
I'm
good.
Really, really beginning to regret that we lost that first recording because you didn't make that laborious point in the first go round.
But anyway, it was good about a small football team in Italy get promoted to Serie B and just about their season.
Mm.
Written by an American guy who falls in love with soccer during the World Cup.
Soccer, that's what they call it, isn't it?
Yeah,
so.
Soccer. And then he follows Alexi Lalas to Italy for a bit, and then he basically cottons onto this team and follows them around for a year.
And it's gone straight into your top five
it's
books of all time.
Straight in.
Alongside what? The Guernsey Beach Guys.
Yeah, that's number one.
A
couple of others.
Mr. Men, Topsy and Tim.
Yeah. Of Mice and Men.
We had to read that at school.
Yeah, exactly. That still counts.
A couple of issues of the Beano. Well, we're not here to talk about books. What I want to talk to you about is cricket, because quite a few things have happened in the cricketing world since we last did one of these, Tone. Have you heard about this Ben Stokes?
Yeah. It's almost been... We've been teasing the listeners because sort of two or three monumental things relatively have happened, and we've not really, we've not bothered to get out of bed. So if people are wondering why we haven't been weighing in, yeah.
Yeah,
it's been a big tease.
It's been a pretty eventful few weeks in cricket, hasn't it?
And we thought we'd better pop back for the Ashes.
As I remember you saying on the first recording of this episode, we've got three things tonight that, that could on their own lead the programme. Ben Stokes, England's Ashes squad, and the big changes that have been announced in Test cricket. But obviously what I actually decided to lead the programme with was you reading a book. I mean, that's the most surprising thing that's happened in the last few weeks.
Yeah, arguably. Just for the benefit of the listeners as well, usually you're the one who's recording the podcast on your laptop.
Mm.
But because we've had an issue with your laptop, I'm doing it on mine. So I'm slightly nervous of it, I don't want to mess it up like you did. So if I get distracted, I'm just watching the recording record.
Sure. And
if I go quiet or don't respond, that's why.
Yeah. Well, I can't see your screen, so
yeah.
Who knows? You could just be watching Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares. All right, Tone. Well, let's kick things off by talking about Test cricket. Yeah, because we've had some big news in the world of cricket this week. The new plans for both Test cricket and ODIs, which were ratified at the ICC conference or whatever they call it.
Tea party.
In Auckland. I've opened a Cricket Info article and it's now going to start playing a video.
Test league comprising 19.
Why? Autoplay is one of the most annoying things in the world.
I agree, because I genuinely don't think anyone, arguably there are occasions, this is a real divergence, isn't it? But there are occasions, because of scrolling through Facebook, that you might happen upon a video, but I don't recall ever stopping and watching a video based purely on the sound.
Mm.
There's no need to autoplay the sound, just for the record, Facebook.
This is almost as good as that Castel Cattel chat, isn't it, Tone? Very strong start.
Strong start.
Well, I was just opening this Cricket Info article because I got a very neat little summary of the key changes to cricket structure. So I'll just read this
out. Couldn't be bothered to write your own.
Starting from 2019, so after the 2019 World Cup, a Test Championship, and they've put that in bold, will be played between the top nine teams over two-year cycles, culminating in a one-off final. Each team will play six opponents over this two-year cycle, three at home and three away. And I'll just add to that, there's a minimum of two tests in each of those encounters, but could be extended to five for the Ashes, etc., although I'm sure it will just be the Ashes. And then an ODI league, which will commence in 2020-21, comprising 13 teams, including the winner of the World Cricket League Championship. The ODI league will now be a direct qualification pathway to the World Cup, with the top 10 teams making it. So yeah, that's what we're looking at. Tom, what do you make of all of this? We've talked about it before. I think we talked about pretty much this exact idea when it was just in the idea stage, but it has now come to pass. What's your feeling about it?
Mixed feelings, I think. I don't know if I speak for both of us, but I feel like we're in a sort of post-context world on the World Cricket Show. We're over context, and now everyone's big on context. And
that's what the point of this is, to give some context to particularly Test cricket, but to ODI, you know, bilateral ODIs as well.
I don't think Test cricket's been lacking a huge... I don't know if context in Test cricket, in ODI cricket, I think that just the ODI series that we've seen for years and years definitely suffer from a lack of context. Although, if you go back to when it was like the NatWest series, or whatever they called it, the NatWest trophy, that seemed to have a bit of context, I don't know.
That sort of triangular
tournament. Exactly, like a triangular series was quite fun, and I do remember quite enjoying that. Test cricket, I don't know, but anyway, that's sort of by the by. For one, I would have preferred them to... Well, they need to be thinking about Test cricket, ODIs and T20s, don't they? They've come up with this plan for Test cricket and ODIs, but they've just completely ignored how T20s fit around that.
Which is the elephant in the room, really.
Yeah, which is a bit of a... I don't know, it's a bit pointless, really. And particularly, I don't think they've got it right in terms of the number of World T20 tournaments that they want to host, because I do think they should be every 2 years. Or even every year. I'd happily have them every year.
But it's still every four, is it?
I believe so.
Mm. There's literally no way for us to find that out.
The test changes, interesting. Playing three series, home and away. But we don't know how... the series are all going to be different lengths. Not everyone will play everyone. So it's not really a proper league. But they're still going to come up with some sort of point system. Because I guess, England could play... Their three away series could be against, New Zealand, West Indies and South Africa. Australia could go to Bangladesh, India and England.
Yeah. Well, this is why... Yeah.
So every two-year cycle is going to be completely different. So really there isn't any context, because context relies on consistency and there's none of that.
Yeah.
So it's contextless in many ways. Well, take a knockout tournament... That makes sense because, you have a draw. So, obviously not everyone plays everyone, but then you funnel through to a winner. If you have a league, everyone has to play everyone for it to be a league. But this is neither, is it? It's neither a league nor is it a draw. And also, the fact it ends with a one-off test doesn't make any sense.
Well, this is it. I mean, it's a bit of a mess, isn't it? It doesn't really make a huge amount of sense. I would describe myself, my feeling about this, as cheesed off. We have talked about it. We talked about this when it was just an idea. I'm not sure what episode it was. Again, there's literally no way.
If we go back, you'd be like, "This is brilliant." It's like that bloody ICC. They'll never do this. It's awesome.
Yeah, probably if we go back far enough, I proposed exactly this system.
This is the troubling thing about this podcast. When you reach 305 episodes, whatever we're on, is that we've probably made every argument. Every different way.
Yeah. Like you, I agree. I don't like it when you speak for me, but I do agree with you. I am post-context. I'm post... I think it's a bit of a misconception or a misanalysis of the problem to say that the problem is that Test cricket lacks context, because Test cricket does have a context of its own. Nothing's changed. Like, lots of things have changed around Test cricket, but nothing has changed within Test cricket from when, during the 70s and the 80s and 90s, no one was sitting around going, God, it's a waste of time, you know, going to South Africa to play a 4-test series. What a waste of time. There's no context here. Like, I don't think that that is the problem. But even if it were the case that that is what Test cricket needs, that what it needs more than anything else is context, this idea doesn't provide context, or it tries to, and I just think it really fails. Because, as you say, a 9-team league over 2 years, firstly, 2 years, I believe, is too long a time to sustain people's interest, to think that first series, oh yeah, we've won this, so in 2 years' time, you know, that'll really count for something in 2 years' time. Well, that's too far away, I think. But also, like, having a 9-team league, I just think after like 6 months, or certainly a year, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be obvious that some of those teams can't win it. And there's no relegation. So, you know, if you're way down the table with a year still to run on this thing, like, it could have the opposite effect. Where, if, you know, think about this series that we just had in the UAE between Pakistan and Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka won that. That's a big deal. Yeah, all right, yeah, played in front of empty stadiums, but that's, the UAE is obviously a slightly special case. But I don't know whether it's like, you know, stopped traffic in Sri Lanka, but presumably, like, Sri Lankan fans are excited about the fact that, you know, they've broken this really long unbeaten streak for Pakistan at home. It's a significant result. But if you imagine that was being played in the context of a two-year championship, and it was 6th versus 7th with, you know, 6 months to play, and that neither team can get to the playoff, it could have the opposite effect, where that series is just completely meaningless. The fact that it doesn't have any meaning within that context would take something away from Test cricket. At the moment, each series has that context of its own, where you want to win the series. I sort of feel like they've bottled it. Like, if you're going to do that, if you're insisting that what Test cricket needs is context, it needs a league, then do it properly and have a two-division system. And yeah, we know why they're not going to do that, because it would be, you know, financially disastrous if India are in the lower division, or India and England, or England and Australia are in separate or in different divisions. But if you genuinely believe that the only way to save Test cricket is to have this context, to have a league structure, do it properly, because doing it like this just doesn't offer anything. I just think it's such a nothing solution, this. You know, having a 9-team league, well, that's kind of what we have already.
Yeah.
But just with a playoff after 2 years, that's just one test. I don't know. I can't see myself getting particularly excited about it, to be honest. Sorry, I said a lot there.
No, I think you're spot on. I mean, yeah, so you're one team, there are eight others, and they play six of them in the two-year cycle. Mm. Like, you know, are England going to play Australia in every two-year cycle? Presumably.
Yeah.
England going to play India then in every two-year cycle, presumably. Likewise, so you are still kind of siphoning off the bottom two teams, or the least glamorous sides, are going to end up still not playing the big teams as often as they might want to. I mean, cricket has got some unique challenges. I don't think there are any other sports that attempt to do what cricket does internationally, or what this proposes. It, because, you know, you look at like rugby. They have, you know, it's a similar situation in terms of the national, international rugby is bigger probably than domestic rugby. You have a World Cup, but then you just play your regional tournaments. Otherwise, you have one-off test matches or an occasional sort of mini tour. But otherwise, you know, the Six Nations is yearly, and it's teams from the same part of the world. And obviously, they're only playing an 80-minute match, so that makes sense. But, you know, cricket, it's an international, they're the nine, or how many teams you want to include, are from all over the world, different seasons, different weather conditions. So they can't, you know, it's no consistent. You couldn't say all nine teams are going to play test cricket, or you wouldn't be able to do that anyway. But if you said there are 10 test teams, you wouldn't be able to say all, you know, start five test matches on this Saturday. So it is very difficult in that sense. So
yeah, and it's very
kind, and the scale of everything, 5 days, or they've suggested that 4-day tests could come in, but the scale of everything makes it very, very difficult to do what other sports do.
Well, and it's very weather dependent as well, as you say. So, like, you know, England can only play in England at certain times of the year, likewise New Zealand and others. So in trying to organise a kind of yearly calendar and fit everything in, there are actually only these windows in some places, yeah, which complicate things. Also, there are fairly unique geopolitical factors as well, yeah, in cricket, yeah, which, and this presumably is the reason why it's not the case that everyone has to play everyone, because India aren't going to play Pakistan. So,
which is tough. It's a small family, and to have, yeah, a couple of them that have fallen out is awkward.
So,
but it is. I don't know. It's almost an impossible task, isn't it? Because you can't have, if you said, "Oh, we'll have a test season from, I don't know, yeah, January to June or something." Yeah, you couldn't have England playing in Sri Lanka 1 week and then playing a home series the next week. Also, for, I suppose, from a business perspective, to sell tickets for the first 4 days of a test match, you know, you need to do that a long time in advance, market it really well. Mm-hmm. You can't just be like, "Oh, suddenly we're playing."
Mm.
So, or maybe in England, I don't know, maybe you could do that and they'd still fill them.
Just rock up at, yeah, rock up at Trent Bridge, yeah, the night before. Just be like, "Right, we've got a test match tomorrow."
because, you know, also those grounds are also trying to sell like gigs and stuff, you know, they're trying to make money. I don't know. It is very, well, very,
that's
complicated.
What, it is extremely complicated. And so they've got a very difficult task. And it's like, in a sense, I don't want to be too critical, because at least they are trying to do something. And I do agree that there is a problem. Like, that, you know, test cricket is hugely under pressure. And if they do nothing, it may well die, or at least, you know, or at least die in some parts of the world. So I appreciate that they're trying to do something, but I just feel they've completely missed the mark here. I just think it's a really inadequate solution that also misunderstands what people like about Test cricket. I really don't think that there are many fans of Test cricket, and not just sort of like purists or MCC people, but anyone who enjoys Test cricket, who this is really going to satisfy, because I don't think the issue is the context. Like, people who like Test cricket, you know, you get involved in the test match and the test series, and that is enough on its own. I know that England is slightly unique because, or it's different because there is the Ashes. So almost there is always a context because you're sort of building up to the Ashes. But nonetheless, I think, you know, England, some of my fondest memories as an England fan are, you know, England winning in South Africa or England winning in India. And that has nothing to do with the fact that it pointed to the Ashes. Like, it's, you know, England's triumphs there had a meaning of their own, and I don't think it would have been any sweeter if it had, you know, given them a couple of extra points to push them up the table to try and get them closer to a playoff. Like, I don't think that's the issue.
I wonder, are we being harsh on the ICC and international cricket? Because, yeah, definitely if you rolled us back a few years, we'd probably been talking about this, saying, yeah, they definitely need to do this. And the pace at which the ICC and cricket can move limits them, in that, you know, it's taken so long to get to this. Even now, you know, what are we, 2017? You know, it's not coming in till after 2019, or after the World Cup in 2019, and then we'll come on to the ODI changes. Not that they're particularly significant, it would seem, or slightly, I don't know.
Yeah,
they are to a certain extent, but anyway, that's another year after that. So, you know, they've got to this point, now we're like, actually, we didn't want it anyway. You suck.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's closer than it seems. Like, you know, 2019,
yeah,
the concept of something coming in 2021 is like impossibly futuristic. But as you said on the recording that was lost, he said, if you're not concentrating and someone asks you what year it is, you think it's sort of 2008, 2009. And I'm very much in that boat as well. So it's a bit closer than it seems. But yes, it's still, it takes such a long time to get things through. But I agree, like, I don't want to be too harsh on the ICC, because, as I say, they do need to do something. But for me, I think, forget about context and think, like, how can we raise the standard of Test cricket? Because that, to me, is the issue. Like, if, obviously, yeah, Test cricket is under pressure from T20 and other things as well, the changing world generally. But I think if Test cricket was really good at the moment, I think it would be less of a problem. But, like, one of the issues is just there aren't that many good test teams around the world, and the quality of cricket that is played, and, you know, the competitiveness of the cricket that is played is often not that good. We talked a lot about all these one-sided games, you know, one way or the other, but so many one-sided games. If you can solve that somehow, I still think there's an appetite for test cricket. I think people, when there is a really exciting test match, people get involved in it. But when the standard isn't what it was in the 90s and the noughties, and maybe this is, you know, maybe it's a chicken and egg thing, because the pressure of, you know, the advent of T20 might be one of the reasons why the standard of Test cricket has gone down. But that's what I think you need to concentrate on, things like the quality of the pitches. Like, the cricket that's played in the Caribbean is just desperately poor because pitches are desperately poor compared to what they were 20, 30 years ago. Those are the things for me that you want to concentrate on. As I've said before, maybe have less of it. It's a slightly counterintuitive argument, but I think one of Test cricket's problems is that there's too much of it. I think if you had fewer series, fewer tests, well, maybe more tests in each series, but fewer tests overall. You know, I've said before, and I know there's lots of people who disagree with this, but I would say have way fewer test series, but make all of them five matches, or at least four, because I think, you know, the narrative over the series, that's what gives it context, a sort of disposable two test series that happens over the space of a week and a half is quite difficult to get excited about. But yeah, if you have five tests and space them out, I think each test match becomes an event and it adds up to this narrative. But even like, even when you do have a four test series, if it all happens in a rush, like we were away for a week in July and we missed half of the England South Africa series, you know, it happens too quickly, doesn't it? And becomes a bit of a blur, and each match is a slight non-event. I'd want to, you know, create that buzz by having it, by making it more rare. So those are the kinds of things that I'd be looking at. I just don't think this solution really does what it sets out to do.
Yeah, and you know, there are a lot of question marks, and I think there's probably a way that this point probably might not happen. I don't know, or will it change much? I saw some people are saying, well, it seeks to address the slightly obscure and complicated point system that's used to determine the rankings, but actually it's going to have to be pretty complicated anyway, because the teams aren't going to be playing the same number of tests, they're not going to be playing the same people.
Yeah,
so they're still going to need some sort of formula or algorithm
waiting for each
nerd to work it out.
This is where I come in.
I agree, it's genuinely tough. I mean, I don't think they should have ruled out, they could have a test World Cup in a country with just like maybe a semi-finals and a final with four teams involved. Yeah, having a one-off test to determine the winner of a two-year event does seem slightly silly to me.
When it could be a draw.
Well, yeah, I mean, surely, well, exactly. What happens then? Countback.
Presumably they might say, let's have a six-day test or even a timeless test or something like that. But it's still, I don't know, yeah, it's just, I just find it hard to imagine getting particularly excited about it, even if England were there as an England fan. I mean, maybe I would, but again, I come back to, well, if you're a fan of another team who's not involved in the playoff, is this really saving Test cricket for fans of West Indies or Sri Lanka if they're sort of sixth or seventh in the table? I don't know that it does much, and it may well have the opposite effect. I mean, one thing that obviously it is trying to do is put in place a more sensible structure. It's still, as we say, that it's not a sensible structure because it's slightly a lottery who you play in that period, but it is the case at the
There's
moment.
There's consistency that it's three home, three away.
Exactly. Because
they said you can play other series as well. And well, the likelihood is that you'll play, the teams will still play perhaps the emerging test nations or the new test nations for two test series here and there. There might obviously there'll be the five test Ashes, all this stuff. So
still
to an outsider, it will still take a lot of explaining.
Still going to be baffling. Yeah. But it does, yeah, but there's some kind of idea that they're trying to straighten things out, because obviously at the moment it makes very little sense. It's just up to the individual boards to arrange tours. And like, say, for example, at the moment, like India are number one in the world, having played, what, like 15 or 16 tests at home in a row, having not toured outside the subcontinent for several years. You know, Pakistan are coming back to England next summer, having been here last summer. And before that, they weren't here for 6 years. You know, like things like that. I think it makes sense to try and
regulate it
exactly. But I think you can do that anyway. I don't think you need to have the rest of this proposal in order to have that kind of regulation.
I do think it's harsh as well on Afghanistan and Ireland, because basically what they've said is like, no, you're not allowed in. They're not allowed. Oh, you're allowed in. Oh, but we've changed it, so you're actually now not part of. They're not really a full member, are they, at this point?
And presumably that's why they gave them test status, because they were like, well, yeah, we might as well.
Because it's sort of faux test status, isn't it? Because, yeah, they'll be test statistics, they're test matches, but they're not really part of the club. They're and finally.
Yeah, it's like sort of letting someone join the country club, but they're not allowed to use the jacuzzi. It's that kind of thing, isn't it?
Criminal.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Also, you've mentioned it, but another another announcement from this ITC jolly is 4-day tests have been approved, with possibly the first 4-day test going to be South Africa hosting Zimbabwe on Boxing Day. We did briefly talk about this a few weeks ago, but what do you think about that idea?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, coming back to regulating things, it's regulating something and then deregulating another crucial aspect of it at the same time. Mm. And I don't, like, as some people, yeah, people have rightly pointed out, like, the concept of a 5-day test match isn't, like, didn't, that's not how cricket was born, is it? It's gone every which way.
Yeah.
Other than that. But, you know, in our lifetime, certainly, it's a 5-day test. That's what a test match is. So, it seems a bit strange to me.
Well, also, it works. I'm sure you've seen a very sort of popular tweet that went around. I can't remember who by, but...
Is it yours?
I don't want to say that, but... No, it wasn't, but... saying, oh, this is going to be a trial of 4-day tests. Well, we've been trialing 5-day tests for, like, 75 years, and it's worked quite well. Like, it works, doesn't it? And I don't know. I just sort of feel... I don't quite know what problem they think they're solving by this. I don't know how it's going to make any difference to people's enjoyment of test cricket. Like, if it's over in 4 days, fine. But there's the possibility that it can go to a 5th day. Genuinely, I think the reason is presumably to do with, like, broadcasters. So it comes down to money in the end, but presumably broadcasters are quite into this idea because they don't, there's one less day that they have to kind of book in their schedule. So
yeah,
if a lot of tests are finishing in 3 or 4 days, which they are, you know, Sky Sports still have to set aside that 5th day to show the cricket. I suppose in Sky Sports' case, it's probably not an issue because they'd only be showing, you know, Stuart Broad 8 for 15 or whatever. But presumably for other broadcasters around the world, it's an issue that they have to set aside 5 days and then it's not going to 5 days very often. So that's presumably the reason for it. But I just think, it may not be that it becomes the standard, and hopefully not. But if it did, I just think, how are you going to... Like, if a day is lost to rain, it's just definitely going to be a draw. But also that thing of so many tests are sort of 3 or 4 days now... is part of the reason for that, or at least it might be different if it was only 4 days. The fact that there is a 5th day makes teams play differently, doesn't it? Like, there might be a lot more draws if teams know that they don't have that 5th day to worry about. They can just shut up shop or whatever. I think it will change the way that people play the game, and it might not be for the better.
Yeah, although again, we're not ever going to see 4-day tests in the Ashes.
Yeah.
Or... it's probably just going to be like Ireland, Afghanistan will be playing 4-day tests.
Yeah.
Most of the time, Zimbabwe.
But again, I don't really know what...
Which again, they're sort of not playing test cricket. They've been,
yeah,
they've been like duped into something.
Not allowed to use the jacuzzi or the sauna.
And then if you move on to the ODI stuff, like, yeah, that's that. They've tightened the ring around that, and that saying that the new league, ODI league format is going to sort of permit direct qualifications to the World Cup. Well, that's what happens now anyway, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know. It's all very frustrating. I was pretty cheesed off, pretty hacked off, pretty brassed off by this news. And I do wonder if, will we look back on this one day and think, that was the day cricket died?
Wow.
That's
strong.
That's very strong. I don't quite believe that, but I do. I certainly feel more disconnected from cricket than at any point in my life. Still connected enough to do a semi-regular podcast, yeah, about it. But I do just think it's going in a direction that I don't like. And I know it's not all about me. And I know there's lots of people who presumably, you know, love that T20 is becoming such a good big thing and, you know, aren't as interested in test cricket and stuff. But, I mean, I love T20, as you know, but test is what it's about for me. And I feel like they're tampering with and potentially ruining something that I love in test cricket, and I'm pretty knocked off about it.
It's tough, man. It's really tough to listen to. I agree. Well, but I with you on that, although equally I really like watching 2020.
Yeah, well, so
I love the 2020 World Cup, the World T20. And they need to, I don't know, they need to have that in the conversation and need to work out what the hell's going on.
Well, that's it, because I'm not a sort of blazer-wearing MCC, you know, I'm not one of these people who say, it's pajama cricket, you know, it's a load of rubbish. I love T20, I absolutely love it, but it's not test cricket.
No, but it's all part of the same, it's on the plate, isn't it? It's a roast dinner, you need all the, it's nice to have the mixture of ingredients and...
You got your nut roast.
Yeah, exactly.
That's test cricket.
Yeah, boring. Leave that aside. Then you've got Yorkshire puddings, which are T20.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they haven't really worked out what the hell's going on with the domestic T20 leagues and where they fit in, like windows or anything like that. So work to be done still. They got 4 years or 3 years.
My door's always open. That's my message to the ICC.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, Tom, well, leaving the bigger picture aside, let's come back to some good old-fashioned on-field cricket discussion. Ben Stokes. let's talk about England in general. There's lots to talk about with England. Obviously, the Ashes squad has been announced, but let's maybe start with Ben Stokes. I'm sure nobody needs me to recap this story. Basically, Stokes' Ashes participation is in doubt, and perhaps more than that, perhaps more than just the Ashes, after he was arrested following an incident outside a nightclub in Bristol. There's no charges as yet, but a police investigation is ongoing, and a video emerged that seemed to be a recording of the incident. Can you describe that video for me, Tane? Can you talk me through what happened?
Tough, isn't it? It's a scrappy affair. It's late at night. Stuff happens, punches are thrown, then some... more punches are thrown by Ben Stokes, it appears. It doesn't look good at all. I mean, I said this in the first recording. Much of what I'm about to say I said in the first recording, you'll have to take my word for it. It's difficult to judge until the actual judge or police have decided, isn't it?
I think we'll let the judge be the judge of this one.
Exactly. I think, first, well, the bottom line, though, is that it's really bad for England, obviously. It's an unfortunate situation, you know, and there are douchebags around, aren't there? But late night scrapping on the street is not what your sort of best player should be getting involved in. And whether he's the douchebag or the people who are scrapping with the douchebags, who knows?
We'll let the judge be the judge.
Exactly.
I'm sure, he may not use the word douchebag in the courtroom, I think so. Obviously, he's been withdrawn from the Ashes squad pending the outcome of that investigation. Now, you've got to think they didn't really have much choice but to do that. Obviously, there's people have different takes on what really went on, and different takes on that video. But I don't think that he can play Test cricket in Australia or anywhere else with the threat of major criminal proceedings hanging over him. So I don't think England had any other choice. Sorry, come on.
No, exactly. And they said he's been suspended from the squad at the moment. If it's cleared up by the time they go or by the time the series starts, then it could be that he can be sort of parachuted in. But I don't know much about the criminal justice system really, but my gut would say it's probably not going to be sorted out by then, given that the team leave in about 2 weeks.
I'm a qualified lawyer, as you know, and I'd tend to agree with you.
Yeah, so I don't know, and even then,
maritime law.
So it's tough to if you're a betting man, you wouldn't bet on Stokes being involved at all in the Ashes, would you, at this point?
No, I don't think so. Even though, as you alluded to, he could still be exonerated. Like, it's hard to believe if you've watched that video. It seems unlikely that he would be exonerated. But obviously, there is this narrative that has emerged, which says that what actually happened is that Stokes was coming to the defence of a gay couple who were receiving homophobic abuse from the two guys that you see him going after in the video. And if that does turn out to be true, then it does change the complexion of things, doesn't it? It still wouldn't necessarily be enough to get him, you know, completely off the hook, either in a legal sense or in a sort of wider sense. But it does change the complexion a bit. I don't know, though, because just watching that video, and we do need to let the judge be the judge of this, but, you know, for me, watching that video, you think, you just look at it and think, well, clearly those two guys, whatever they may have done, they're backing away. And I think it would be difficult to argue, at least with that last punch, you know, the kind of right hook that cleans one of them up. I think it would be difficult to argue that was really necessary. And it just doesn't look good, does it? That sort of level of violence, it's pretty ugly. And I don't know that even if that is really what happened, you know, he really was coming to people's defence, I don't know that that's going to be enough to get him off the hook. And it's a difficult one as well, because I know, obviously, there are a lot of people who are sort of sticking up for Stokes, and George De Bell, who, you know, is someone who I, you know, have a lot of time for, or respect for what he has to say about things. But, you know, he tweeted something like, oh, when I watch that video, what I see is someone sticking up for their friends. And I can see why he would say that, if that is indeed, you know, that really is what happened. But there is a danger, I think, that you can get influenced by who it is. Like, you can have your view on the situation skewed a bit by the fact that it's Ben Stokes. It's a player that we desperately don't want to see taken out of Test cricket. It would be hugely damaging to England's Ashes chances and chances beyond that if he is banned, or, you know, if he's removed from the team. So you desperately, as an England fan and just as a fan of cricket, you really don't want to see that happen. And I just wonder if it wasn't Ben Stokes, it was another player, if it was someone like Mark Stoneman, you know, who's only just come into the team, or someone like Adil Rashid, who you'd be surprised if it was Adil Rashid in that situation. But if it was someone like that, who's, you know, not as vital to the team, his face maybe doesn't quite fit in the same way. If that was who it was, I don't know if people would be rallying round him in the way that some people have been rallying around Stokes.
Yeah, although I think it swings both ways, though, because, yeah, in that sense, you know, perhaps people are minded to be more lenient or more forgiving because it's Ben Stokes, where then a lot of other people will be more scrutiny, you know, there'll be more scrutiny and a harsher treatment because he's Ben Stokes, because he's the big name in English cricket. Mm. Yeah, you know, the big IPL contract.
The tabloids are going to want to sort of tear him down.
And, you know, he's got to slightly check it. Well, in the grand scheme of checkered history, his history isn't that checkered, but he's had incidents in the past which make him slightly notorious. And he's not your typical sort of England... I don't know what's the expression. No, he's not, you know, he's not sort of... he's not Andrew Strauss, is he?
Yeah.
That's the expression I was looking for. he's sort of tattoos and, you know, a bit more...
He's not a sort of gentleman scholar.
Yeah, exactly. But that...
I would have been surprised if it had been Andrew Strauss in that situation.
But then you have to be fair, you have to split those down the middle, don't you?
Mm. Yes, that's a very good point that you make, but I was just thinking about it, you know, like comparing it to Mohammed Amir's case, where... You know, obviously a very different situation, but similarly, I think we at the time and other people at the time as well possibly had more sympathy for Mohammed Amir than we would have done for some other players, or indeed we did have for Salman Butt, because he was such a good player and such a good prospect, and we desperately didn't want to see him banned for 5 years. We wanted to see him play Test cricket. Certainly at the time, I felt I had to kind of resist that drift towards being like, you know, no, give him a chance, because you really want to see him play. And, you know, similarly, Saeed Ajmal, when he was banned for chucking, you know, there was definitely a big part of me that was like, nah, you know, I just want to see Saeed Ajmal bowl, so don't ban him. And I just wonder if, you know, the same thing could happen here. And I, as I say, if it was someone that people didn't really care whether they played for England or not. I don't know whether they would see that video in the same way. The judge will make his judgment. And obviously the facts do matter. The you know, whether or not it is true that he was standing up for people who were being abused, that does, if that is true, then it does make a big difference. And it's still not great. Like, you know, as we say, I think even if that is the case, it still might not get him out of this. But it does change the way you think about it, and it might make the difference between him, you know, missing a few tests or missing a period of time and him possibly never playing for England again, or at least having a very long ban. So, yeah, remains to
be seen. And either way, it, you know, to return to cricketing matters, it leaves a massive hole, doesn't it? A gaping hole.
It certainly does. So, yeah, so Stokes is almost certainly not going to Australia, but here are some players who are going to Australia. The England Ashes squad has been announced. This is some breaking news.
Yeah, this is, we're right on the money here.
I think we can exclusively reveal this Ashes squad because it was named on September the 25th. The big headlines here are Tom Wesley dropped, no place for Mark Wood, and call-ups for Jake Ball, Craig Overton, Mason Crane as the second spinner, and the middle-order batting options of Gary Balance, James Vince, and Dawid Milan, who retains his place. And yeah, Stokes has been withdrawn, at least for the time being, and Stephen Finn called up. So what do you make of this squad, Tone? What's your feeling? Are you confident?
Confident is not a word I'd use. Nostalgic, actually. Nostalgic for the good old days of us getting battered, like, 2 years ago. Was it four years ago?
What, the 5-0?
Yeah. That wasn't 4 years ago.
It was, mate.
No, that was 2 years ago.
It was 2013, mate.
That was mental. Because my assumption that we play them all the time at the moment. Yeah. But that was 4 years ago.
4 years ago, mate.
Yeah. So, well, nostalgic for, longer before than that.
You mean for a better squad?
Make nostalgic for, like, when we just didn't have that good a team and we'd get beaten by Australia.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Like, for the 90s.
Yeah.
Why? Because this reminds you of that?
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, I see. Right, yeah.
I quite like it. In other ways, yeah, it's slightly unsettling. I mean, we've said it all summer, like, none of the questions that the selections or the people coming in have been posed or have posed themselves have been answered, if that makes sense.
Mm.
This is not a new situation, is it? But no one has come in and been like, and we're like, well, there's our guy at, you know, at opener or number three. Like, it's tough. So, you know, the players they've come up with, I suppose they couldn't do much better. They've just got to go with what they think. And perhaps they've gone back to people they know a little bit rather than bringing in people they don't. You know, like, Vince is just a bit of a clutching at straws. It could go either way.
Yes, I suspect there's one way that it's likely to go.
Gary Balance, we've talked about at length. You know, he's been there and not done it three times, so it's tough to be too optimistic about him. But then again, there's a reason he was brought in the first place, so there is a nagging hope about the likes of Gary Balance.
Well, and you said on that famous lost recording, you said at least he's a name.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's a name. We know. Like, I'm like, you know, like Joe Root, Johnny Bairstow, Gary Balance. He's in there. He's like, I know him. He's played for England before.
Well, yeah, we know him, and we know he's not good enough.
But you know, in the whole, that it, you know, there's a lot of names that you've underlined.
Yeah.
You personally have underlined. But then again, you've got, you know, any side that's got Joe Root, Alistair Kirk, like, heading up the batting, and then, you know, the, like, Anderson, Broad, you know, they're going to have a chance.
Well, this is
how much of a chance?
This is it, and this is why it's slightly strange. Like, yeah, again, earlier on you were talking about the sort of chasm between the predictions of some people and others.
Let me read you some of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No one, I'd venture to say that we'll probably be the only people who are, like, yeah, as you put it earlier, giving the sort of, you know, uni essay answers, where we're like, well, that's one argument, that's the other, will come somewhere down the middle.
Straight down the middle.
People who aren't coming straight down the middle, the likes of Andrew Flintoff, if you've heard of him,
yeah.
Jim Maxwell, Jonathan Agnew. So Freddie says, or is quoted in this BBC Sport article as saying, that the England's current test side are the best team we've ever had. And it's not a case of England winning, it's by how many, he told BBC Radio 5 Live. I don't know whether he was just joshing around with the ping pong guy. Jim Maxwell says that England will lose 5-0. And that England are sending one of the worst ever batting lineups to Australia. Jonathan Agnew, coming from a similar position, says this is the weakest party I've seen sent down under from these shores. So, you know, they're mincing their words there.
Mm.
And, you know, that is in some ways surprising because there are, as you said, some of the best players of all time for England in this lineup and some of the best players in the world at the moment. Okay, you take Ben Stokes out of that as well, it's a bit of a problem. But the ones that are left, the guys that are filling in, yeah, not that exciting.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, this is what, as you say, it does seem, in one sense, it seems slightly strange to take the Agnew line of saying this is the weakest England side that's ever gone to Australia, because it does contain some of England's best ever players, at least statistically, in Cook, Root, Anderson, Broad. And if you chuck in, certainly, Johnny Bairstow and well, this is, I'm having to force this out, but maybe Moeen Ali. You know, you could say that England have got sort of six or seven genuinely world-class players in the lineup. So when you compare that to some of the teams that went down there in the 90s, it does seem quite a peculiar thing to say that this is the weakest side ever. But nonetheless, there are so many problems in the team that I would veer more towards the Agnew end of things than the Flintoff end of things. Still going down the middle, like, you know, this, the end of my essay where I say, in conclusion, it was a little bit of both. Bob's your uncle, give me a 2-1. There are clearly some big, big problems in this squad, and there would be big, big problems whoever they pick. So, you know, the selectors do have a difficult task because there's not sort of obvious candidates. But that being said, I do think that they've got every big call wrong here. And I don't want to be too big-headed about it, but I'm pretty convinced that I'm right about that. Now, I just think in every department, like even if you look at something like the backup seam bowling, like the first choice seam bowling looks strong if Wokes does come back to form. It's unfortunate that Roland Jones is injured. But if Wokes comes back, that's a good-looking seam attack. But the backup in Jake Ball and Steve Finn just is really uninspiring. And I understand why they didn't want to take Mark Wood, because he's injured at the moment and he is so prone to injury. But he does at least give you that, you know, that X factor, which is obviously a cliche, but it's something a bit different. Whereas if, you know, if someone breaks down on the morning of a test and Jake Ball is thrown in, it doesn't fill me with much optimism, and I don't think it would add much energy to the team. So just kind of everywhere you look, Mason Crane as the backup spinner, again, I don't really understand that. They obviously really like him, but he's bowled about 10 overs in first class cricket and, you know, only actually played a couple of internationals, and they said they weren't going to take any debutants on this series, and it's a strange one. And then we come to the batting, and you know, you've mentioned how excited you are about Gary Balance. There's not a lot to be confident about in that batting lineup, is there?
I think the worst part about it is, yeah, and you everyone knows what the Ashes is all about. The England team know what going down under is going to be all about. You know, they'll have it in the ear from the likes of both of them that they're going to be in for an absolute, you know, cauldron, which they are. Mm. You know, Warner saying Ashes will be war. You know, but just England on top of the Stokes situation, which is a massive, massive blow, to have this England just going massively on the back foot. And so the danger is that they get blown away in the first test, and then where do you go? You know, it's a long way back from there.
But I think it's partly of their own making, though, that they're on the back foot, because I really do think, and we've talked about the bad selections over the last couple of years a lot, but these are more bad selections, and I really do think that there needs to be a change in the selectors, because they're just not doing a very good job. And to go back to Gary Balance again is baffling, and then to go back to James Vince, who, you know, he's clearly a very talented player, but he was dropped from the team after an extended run last year because he didn't cut it. He's gone back to Championship cricket and scored no runs, and now he's straight back into bat at three, and nobody saw it coming, and rightly so, because it's a completely insane selection. And hopefully he'll prove everybody wrong and have a brilliant series, but it's a bizarre gamble.
It could be the stuff of movies in the future. You know, Vince could be a man of the series, and it.
Well, maybe, but you look at that somebody like Sam Northeast, who I've been lobbying hard for over the last couple of seasons. Not even in the Lions squad. They obviously have something against it. They have some reason why they don't think he's up to it. But you know, if you look at the numbers since the start of the 2015 season, this was a listener who tweeted this to us. I can't remember who it was. I apologise. Since the start of the 2015 season, James Vince has scored 1,812 runs at 33.56. Sam Northeast has scored 3,522 runs at 57.74. And all right, selection is more than just looking at statistics. Otherwise, literally anyone could do it. But it still seems hard to understand why they've gone for James Vince on that basis alone. And yeah, at least one out of Vince, Balance and Dawid Milan is probably going to have to play all five tests because there just aren't that many. There's no other batsman in the squad. And that isn't very encouraging, I don't think.
There you go. Get your BT subscription sorted.
I hope I'm proved wrong, but I'm not confident.
Well, you haven't got long to wait, because it all kicks off in about 6 weeks. Less.
Very soon, isn't it?
It's 5 weeks.
Well, yeah, we've obviously been a little bit sporadic of late, haven't we, in terms of delivering world cricket shows. But we're just kind of gearing ourselves up, because, yeah, once we kick into November, it's going to be pretty relentless, I think. You're not going to be able to get rid of us.
No, we're ready to go. We are ready to go.
I've already bought my cereal.
You stocked up?
I've stocked up on cereal. I'm ready for this. Much like Theresa May's speech at the Conservative Party conference, and the rest of this joke pretty much writes itself, doesn't it, Tane? And it's very topical as well, only 2 weeks out of date.
Yes, much like the rest of the show.
The podcast's over is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, that's just not to get too political, but it was humorous. Just how absurd that speech was. Just like, even like the letters falling off the wall. Yeah. It's just brilliant.
Well, that's why I thought I'd shoehorn a reference to it into the end of the show here.
Get it in there, mate.
Mm. Have you had fun tonight, Tane?
It's been good. Really good. Let's do it again.
What's going on? You here for a while?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I'm here this week.
It's a quiet week, is it? Just staying at home reading a bit of Dostoevsky.
Just catching up on the reading. I'll be around for a little while. Yeah, so well, once we get to the Ashes, it will be all systems go, won't it? And before as well.
Yeah.
And perhaps next time we'll pod before the Ashes a couple of times at least, and we'll have probably some more contemporary issues to discuss.
You mean in politics?
Yeah.
In British politics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, you couldn't get much more contemporary than the changes to Test cricket. That was in the last, 72 hours. Well, how much?
Probably take me a couple of days to edit this, so yeah. Be getting on for a week.
Well, how much more current do you want?
If the answer to that question is none more current, then you're clearly a fan of the World Cricket Show. And if you're a fan of the World Cricket Show, get more involved in it on the internet. We've got a number of social media accounts, including, and this is some breaking news, Tane, that only goes back to about September the 22nd, including an Instagram page, an online Instagram page. We're on Instagram, Tane, at World Cricket Show.
It's just a channel, isn't it? Social media channels, channeling the World Cricket Show to your devices.
And we've really thrown ourselves into it as well, with two posts already.
Keep them coming.
In the last 3.5 weeks. There might be another post going up today or tomorrow.
Almost certainly. Because
when I arrived here tonight at your flat, there, you've got a little buzzer, haven't you? A little press that, and I had to wait for absolutely ages, like a minute and a half, 2 minutes. So I was like, what is he doing? What is going on up there? You eventually buzzed me in, and when I got up, you're like, yeah, sorry about that. I was just taking a picture of you just on the little monitor.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll put that on Instagram. So that's at World Cricket Show. We're on Twitter at Cricket Show. I'm at Adam Bayford 12, and Tony is at Tony Cover.
With a blue tick.
Like us on Facebook, moving swiftly on from that, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/cricketshow. Send us an email, worldcricketshow@gmail.com. I'd like to say as well, talking about books, listen to my other podcast that I do.
Here we go.
Professionally.
This wasn't on my script. Gone off piste.
For my work, where I work at the public library in Guernsey. Check that out.
Work.
interviews with authors. If you hit me up on Twitter at AdamBayford12, there's a link through to it there. So yeah, send us an email, worldcreatureshow@gmail.com. And if you want to support this show in a financial way, there's a couple of ways to do that. When you're doing your regular shopping on Amazon, if you go first of all to cricketshow.net and follow the link from there, anything you buy helps to support the show because we get a little bit of a kickback. So a huge thank you to everyone who does do that, because many of you do. And if you want to make a regular donation, you can do that on Patreon, patreon.com/cricketshow. We're really grateful to all our patrons because it does help to keep us going. And Tony is apparently going to pull the trigger on ordering some equipment tomorrow. That's only the 7th or 8th time that I've said that.
Yeah, but I think we are... This is the most excited I've been about it.
This is the first time that you've actually believed that you're going to pull the trigger tomorrow.
Yeah, I believe my own hype.
So we might have some new audio recording equipment in time for the Ashes, which will be very exciting.
Yeah.
Hopefully it would mean we won't have the fiasco like tonight, where this is the second time that we've recorded this.
Well, hopefully.
But yes, that is the end of this one, finally. Thanks for letting me come round, Tone. Stay in school, everybody, and we will see you soon. Bye-bye for now.
Cheery. I can smell your fear. Ba da da ba ba, ba da da ba ba. Ba da da ba ba, ba da da ba ba. Ba da da ba ba, ba da da ba ba. Ba da da ba ba, ba da da ba ba.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.